to the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. This and other great health talk shows at RadioMD.com. Here are Joe Galewski and Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Hey, welcome in. Thank you for listening. This is the Passionate Radio Show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. It is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. Dr. Mike's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. Joe Galewski, I'm here. I'm as much of an active and avid listener as you are listening today, whether it's on one of our affiliates or on RadioMD.com or even on iHeart Radio Talk. But in any event, if you'd like to reach Dr. Mike today, it's udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. And again, thank you for listening. Our affiliates around the country today. And don't forget, if you haven't tried it yet, you should. It's iHeartRadio Talk. It's a unique way to get the information specifically tailored to you. iHeartRadio is a service that provides information and entertainment to your liking. And you can add RadioMD and You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, to the Daily Pulse on iHeartRadio Talk. This is a news and updates station you can customize. You can download the app or you can go on the internet. When you go on the internet, click Talk in the main menu, then search for You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Hi, Dr. Mike.
Hello, Joe.
Okay, guest at 35 minutes after the hour. It's I've read these books before, and I can probably read an entire book like this because it just fascinates me. It's an interesting book, and we're going to talk about the Book of Odds, right?
It's actually wonderful, and we're going to talk with Louise Firth Campbell and specifically talk about what are your odds of getting certain diseases, and then, excuse me, what can you do to change those odds? So, obviously, what are your odds of getting breast cancer? What are your odds of getting colon cancer or prostate cancer? And then what can you do to change those odds, and how much do they change? So we'll talk a lot about that. We're even going to talk about the odds of getting a disease if you receive blood, because we're going to have a great story about something special in blood. In fact, it's the number one story of the week, Joe.
Good. And don't forget, what are the odds of you falling out of love with somebody after a first kiss? That's just the romantic in me, but I'd like to know what the odds of that are, too. But she has an answer to that as well. So it'll be fun. It'll be informative. Louise Firth Campbell, The Book of Odds, at 35 minutes after the hour. udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. The medical stories of the week are terrific. They're timely. They're interesting. And we always get to those this week. The one that I think is most interesting to me, because I take one every day on your recommendation, and I'm not sure I need to take one anymore. Aspirin. Who shouldn't take a daily aspirin every day?
Well, this shows the limitations of the FDA process more than anything else. So Bayer submitted its aspirin for review as a preventive medication that is preventing heart disease. And if all you look at is heart disease, and you don't look at peripheral vascular disease, and you don't look at stroke, and you don't look at its prevention of cancer, then the risks of taking an aspirin overwhelm the benefits. But remember, you only get one set of risks from those two aspirin. You get many benefits, including prevention of colon cancer, prevention of prostate cancer, prevention of breast cancer. In fact, 11 cancers are reduced between 20 and 40% by two baby aspirin a day, as well as heart disease, stroke, and peripheral vascular disease. So the overall and the overwhelming thing is you should take, if your risks of any of those processes, your risk of dying in the next 10 years is greater than 2.5%, which is what occurs for most men over the age of 35, most women over the age of 40, then you should take two baby aspirin a day. But the FDA, because it's siloed, it only looks at heart disease in one group. It looks at GI problems in another. It looks at breast problems in another, women's conditions. So, in fact, they don't even get all the cancers that it can prevent in any one analysis. So they have, and that's the way they're set up. So they turned this down, really something very, what I would call problematic in the way we're siloed in the FDA approval process.
Now, this was, this emanated from the fact that Bayer wanted to change their label that would show that taking a Bayer aspirin a day would prevent a heart attack, help prevent a heart
right.
attack, among other things. So the FDA apparently, I guess they shot that down. Was the FDA right in shooting that assertion down by Bayer?
You know, the problem is that we don't have a way at the FDA of saying this two baby aspirin a day decreases your risk of dying or your all-cause mortality. We just don't, there's no mortality section. There's no cancer overall section at the FDA. So the FDA is legitimately right in turning this down based on their limited and their siloed performance standards. But it isn't what you should do as a human. As a human, Joe, anybody who's got a risk of 2.5% all-cause mortality or disability over the next 10 years should take two baby aspirin a day, which includes just about every guy over 35 and certainly includes me, and would include my wife, Nancy. And yes, there is a risk. There is. I don't know of anything that doesn't have a risk in it, even driving to work for the radio show, but especially with Dr. Oz on the road. But on the other hand, there is a great benefit, and that benefit is protection for me against prostate cancer, colon cancer, liver cancer, protection against diabetes, and as well as protection against ischemic or some forms of stroke and protection against heart disease and peripheral vascular disease. So for me, the overwhelming benefit is in taking two baby aspirin a day with a half a glass of warm water before and afterwards.
So you're telling me today I should go home and take my aspirin like I do every day, right?
I am exactly, I'm giving you the choice of doing it, but the odds are that you will receive a greater benefit from doing it than harm from doing it.
Yeah. And the risk
is tying in those first two. That book. Yeah. You notice how I snuck that book story in, Joe?
Yes, yes. The risk is bleeding.
The book is the Book of Odds.
The Book of Odds, right? The Book of Odds. Our guest at 35 after the hour. The risk is internal bleeding, generally correct.
Correct. It's bleeding into your gastrointestinal tract because the aspirin lands on the lining. And of causing bleeding. There also is a risk if you're in a traumatic event. Someone hits you over the head with a baseball bat, you're going to bleed a lot more because your platelets won't work as well if you've had aspirin within 7 days beforehand, or really if you've had aspirin within the day beforehand.
And the best time of day to take it?
When you remember to do so.
Really? I thought it was at night. You told me to take it at night.
The best time is at night, but since most people will forget to do it a lot, the best time is when you will remember to do it.
Okay. We'll go to a break in a minute, but talk about fruits and vegetables, how they may lower stroke risk in about a minute, if you can fit that in.
So this is a epidemiologic study or a study looking at, if you will, the odds of certain things and the associations, if you will. And so this is one that talks about fruits and vegetables. And the data is pretty clear. 20 studies over the last 19 years, including more than 760,000 people, stroke risk declined 32% for every 200 grams of fruit consumed each day, 11% for the same thing. 200 grams is about... what is it, 20, on average it would be about 6 servings of fruits and veggies, decrease your stroke risk 32% for fruit and about 11% for veggies.
All right, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Why do you think most smokers fear quitting smoking? What is the biggest fear smokers have if they do decide to quit smoking? Dr. Mike will tell you coming up after the break. Here on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start insures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
You still rely on sugar or caffeine for energy? B12 is known as the energy vitamin. It nourishes your body, supporting mental function and vitality. Problem is, B12 is hard to absorb. Did you know a recent study showed almost 4 out of 10 people had B12 levels in the low normal to deficiency range? This applied to both young and old, even those with adequate meat intake. So, it isn't just vegans or older folks who need to be concerned. Until now, the alternative was getting a shot at the doctor's office. What if we had a B12 offer that was simple? Liposomes deliver B12 painlessly. No doctor visit. Why not discover what B12 can offer you? Drink the new liposomal form. Right now, you can get a bottle for 50% off at B12offer.com. This limited time B12 offer is unique and it's easy. Just go to B12offer.com for 50% off. That's B12offer.com.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. The U.S. is experiencing an increase in the number of cases of whooping cough. This is a serious illness caused by pertussis bacteria. It often starts with what seems like a common cold. Then, especially for toddlers, the cough worsens and leads to the characteristic whoop sound on inhaling. During this phase of the illness, which usually lasts more than 2 weeks, the child can get short of breath and the skin around the mouth may turn blue. Older children may cough so hard they vomit. The illness can be particularly deadly for infants who can develop complications such as pneumonia and seizures. Whooping cough is highly contagious and can spread to children who have not been vaccinated. The best way to prevent this dangerous illness is to be sure your child received all doses of the pertussis vaccine. This is usually given as the DTaP vaccine. And for more information on preventing whooping cough, visit www.cisp.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Hey, we're brought to you weekly by Morning and Night Multivitamins and UBeauty.com. UDocs at gmail.com, YOUDOCS at gmail.com is the email address to reach Dr. Mike. 35 minutes after the hour, Louise Firth Campbell, her book is called The Book of Odds, From Lightning Strikes to Love at First Sight, The Odds of Everyday Life. Our guest at 35 after the hour. Every week on my morning show here in Syracuse, WSYR Radio, Dr. Mike joins me Tuesday mornings. We do a health segment for a couple of minutes. And the topic we talked about earlier this week on my morning show, the title was 10 Health Trends That Are a Total Waste of Time, among them being ear candling, doing a diet, a water diet, oil pulling, swallowing oil for 20 minutes, cupping, putting these heat cups on your back, placenta pills, going gluten-free to lose weight, juicing, cleansing, a waste of time. One of them also was avoiding GMOs, genetically modified foods. And that is one of the top medical stories of the week. What can you say about that, Dr. Mike?
Well, I'm going to throw it to Bridget to ask her what she knows about GMO foods and why they, quote, confuse consumers.
So GMOs are a hot topic, especially this past week, because of Vermont being the first state to sign into legislation a bill require them to label GMOs on all of their foods. So the problem is that not found any risks that are associated with GMOs, but a lot of consumers are against them, which is why it's prompting a lot of food companies to label them. But really all they are is food that has been bred to resist pesticides and herbicides, so it's crossbred in the lab, taking basically the best both plants in order to do that. So most of the foods that you'll find them in are corn oil, corn starch, high fructose corn syrup, or soybean oil. And then they're also used very heavily in cattle feed. And so while they're in a lot of foods in the food supply, like I said, there's no research that shows any harms. And so there's a lot of consumers that are against having GMOs in their diet, and they think that it leads them to being healthier, when really it hasn't proven to do much benefit.
So the other issue on this, if you will, is that the genetically modified foods have caused a political fight. So in Europe, you have to label them, and many countries are now banning them, as opposed to, if you will, in the United States, 90% of the corn is GMO and isn't labeled, and obviously almost every packaged food has some corn in it, it turns out. So Vermont is now requiring the labeling of GMO foods, and this is going to be a states' rights versus federal rights as the food industry fights the Vermont issue to a strong degree, Joe.
Are they healthy? Are GMO foods healthy?
We don't know
of
any risk.
They're safe, yeah.
We don't know of any risk from them. There are many people who try and avoid them, but they're really just when corn was being produced earlier on, it was being produced by what we call Mendelian genetics. You know, you take one strain and mate it with another strain and try and get the stronger or the better properties of both to survive. What GMO has done is it actually does this in a mass production way, and then once they find a corn that is resistant to pesticides or resistant to certain diseases, they then put this corn, let this corn prosper, multiply, and then the company that sells it, does this in such a big way as they then make an awful lot of money on it. And in fact, even if their corn drifts into someone else's field, that person has to pay Monsanto a royalty. It is part of the craziness. The person who actually engineered this, the patent protection, is Judge Thomas of the Supreme Court, as he was a Monsanto lawyer, got Monsanto all this protection, and even on the court hasn't recused himself since he no longer has affiliation, but has supported his own positions back when he was doing the work in Monsanto, something that a lot of people have taken to criticizing him for.
Yeah. That article we talked about, when I referenced the article when we started this discussion on this particular topic today, the health trends that are a waste of time. I don't want to get into all of them, but the one about gluten-free always interests me. And one of the trends they thought was a total waste of time was, doing gluten-free, going gluten-free to lose weight. Can you just talk about that? Do you think that's true or not?
Well, I'm going to combine it with that other story on weight gain fears keep smokers from quitting, since okay. They're both about weight loss. 53% of smokers who don't quit say the reason they don't quit is, in fact, they gained weight during previous quit attempts. So I should tell you that we've now had something over 2,000 people quit smoking on our e-coaching program, EnforcerEcoaching.com. There is a charge for it, but with that, it starts out with stepping as well as daily emailing of your steps to us and us responding, coaching daily. Those people who do that, the average weight loss for women is about 2 pounds. The average weight gain for men is a pound over the period while they've quit smoking plus 7 months. So it's not very much. But in this study, the weight gain was on average for the people who didn't want to try it. And that may be they tried it in the wrong way. They didn't use something like our program was 8 to 14 pounds. Well, you don't have to gain that at all, as our 2,000 people who've done the Enforcer e-coaching program says. Now, none of those went on a gluten-free diet, but you can go on a gluten-free diet. Gluten-free means that you're avoiding all products such as oat and wheat that have gluten in it. The value of that diet isn't that that there's something in gluten that makes you gain weight faster. The value of that diet is that by avoiding a large class of foods, if you can't eat wheat or oats or a whole bunch of other things like that, you will end up cutting out an awful lot of carbohydrate, and in doing so, you will, I think, lose weight that way. So the diet works, but not because of that reason. And if you eat just the same amount of calories of different sorts on the gluten-free diet as you did when you were eating gluten, then you won't lose any weight.
While we're on the subject of nutrition, what about calories? Are all calories equal?
Well, that's another interesting study this week, where, in fact, the calories that provide sugar or sweetness seem to induce you to eat more calories. So while all calories are created equal, some have more ability to satiate you or mean that you won't be hungry than others. And so the issue here is, are you, in fact, getting too many calories because you're eating food with sugar or simple carbohydrates or added syrups that turn into sugar fast enough to make you want to eat more and aren't as satiating as protein or fat is as a food?
Will, is exercise the best way to burn calories?
Well, when you decide that you want to lose weight, I don't know of any diet that works that doesn't include a buddy, that is someone to support you and encourage you, that doesn't include increased physical activity and decreased portion size and calories in. So the buddy provides stress, because a lot of us eat comfort foods from stress reasons. And then the other things are to decrease your sugar intake and to increase your calorie output. I think you need all three. And it works very well when you do all three, Joe.
Louise Firth Campbell, the co-author of the Book of Odds, next on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.
My story may help you. This is what happened. I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. Since it had gone on for a couple of weeks, my friend said I had to go to the doctor. Of course, she was right. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. To make a long story short, by realizing something might be wrong and seeing my doctor right away, I received treatment. Now, we're confident I'll be fine. Please, please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Uterine, cervical, ovarian, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers. Signs and symptoms are not the same for everybody. So get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Knowing can make all the difference in the world. It did for me.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi there, I'm Juliana Rancic.
And I'm Bill Rancic.
I love my job as an entertainment reporter, but what I love even more now is being a new mom.
And you are a great mom. I'm
Thanks,
very
honey.
Proud of you, honey.
Thanks.
Like any responsible parent, Juliana and I wanted the best for our little son, Duke, and that includes a healthy future. We know firsthand that life is pretty unpredictable. We didn't anticipate getting Juliana's cancer diagnosis or even having challenges with pregnancy. I don't think anyone does. Mm-hmm. But as parents, we can plan for the unexpected.
That's why we want to share our decision to bank Duke's cord blood when he was born. The blood in a newborn's umbilical cord contains millions of young, valuable stem cells that are used to treat childhood conditions like cancers and blood diseases and are being studied as potential therapies for cerebral palsy and even autism.
Julianne and I are proud to partner with Cord Blood Registry and the Healthy Futures Campaign to help raise awareness about the value of cord blood and the options for saving or donating it.
We encourage you to take action for your family's healthy future. Go to parentsguidecordblood.org to learn more.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him opening his own clothing store at the age of 18? 1 in 138,000. Excited to be a part of pop culture, he packed for the big city. The odds of finding someone to invest in his vision? 1 in 4.5 million. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
What are the odds that a man will admit to having cried at a wedding? Or what are the odds, the chances of a woman saying she wouldn't date a man because he's too short? What do you think the odds are that a person 18 years old or older will die of lung cancer caused by secondhand smoke? Or the odds that a bride will sign a prenup before she gets married? It's all in the Book of Odds. Louise Firth Campbell is the co-author of the Book of Odds. From Lightning Strikes to Love at First Sight, The Odds of Everyday Life. It's published by William Morrow, and she's our guest in this segment on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. You know, these are terrific bathroom readers, and I mean that as a compliment. I don't mean that to put you down in any way, but they're great bathroom readers, and I've read Book of Odds books before. And I kind of wonder how much consistency there is in these odds and how much study goes into finding out that the odds an email will contain pornography are 1 in 12. I mean, how much study needs to be done to come up with that definitive answer?
Well, it depends upon what the issue is. There are some things for which there are lots of data.
collected repeatedly in a consistent fashion. So, for example, cancer diagnosis or cancer death odds and so forth are compiled every couple of years by the Center for Disease Control, and it's something called the SEER database. But there are other things that are more one-offs and or a little more difficult, like the odds you'll get struck by lightning. That took a bit of work to do, and especially because it changes over time, and as well as other things that are, you know, like one-off events and not something that is routinely collected and analyzed by lots of people. So the more something is studied, the easier it is to compile the odds and have a definitive answer. And then we also have to deal with the fact that sometimes there's more than one source that collects information, but the information may be a little bit different. And a good example of that are crime data. There are two categories of crime data. One is things that are reported to the authorities, to the police and FBI, and others are representations or recollections of people who are the subject of crime, and that's done by an annual household survey. And we, in something like that, where it's really two kind of different things, we elected in our work to include both kinds of odds. But it really depends on the type of the category of work and whether it's been studied a lot versus not a lot at all.
It's interesting, interesting information. I love reading these things. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
And I must admit, this is a wonderful book, nicely organized, great. And you have a Facebook page that people can go to for information, Book of Odds, on the Facebook.com page. Now, one of the things is it also tells you what the chances of reducing your odds of things, such as, what are the odds of breast cancer, Louise?
Yes, I mean, the odds of breast cancer, the odds a woman will be diagnosed with breast cancer in her lifetime are 1 in 8. And that's, yes?
And you can reduce those, I take from reading the book, by doing what things?
Well, there's two kinds of risks associated with lots of different conditions and illnesses, and one of them are uncontrollable risk, and the other category is controllable risk. And for breast cancer, so for example, for breast cancer, if you have a first-degree relative, that would mean a mother, sister, or daughter that's been diagnosed with breast cancer, your odds are considerably worse than 1 in 8. They're 1 in 4.5 for one first-degree relative that's been diagnosed. About 15 to 20% of that, the family history risk is explained by gene mutations in the BRCA1 or BRCA2 genes, but both of those are uncontrollable risk factors. You're born with it, you have a predisposition or some other factors that means if your first-degree relatives have it, you're probably going to have a higher risk of getting that. There are some controllable risk factors for breast cancer, and they're the kind of things that you find in lots of different conditions. So they're excess weight, smoking, and exercise are three of the most common controllable risk factors.
So this is if you do exercise, you're less likely to get it. How much does it reduce it if you say you do 30 minutes of exercise a day?
Well, it depends upon the amount of exercise you do and how long you've been doing it. But a woman who exercises can reduce her risk of being diagnosed with breast cancer from 6% to 28%, depending on the type and duration of exercise. The other kind of thing you can do is to stop smoking if you smoke. So a very recently published study in February 2013 found the rate of new cancers was 24% higher in smokers and 13% higher in former smokers than non-smokers. A lot of the prior work on that particular topic has been confounded because both alcohol and smoking were highly correlated, but this study purports to isolate the smoking risk. So that's relatively
recent. So if you stop smoking and you exercise and stay thin, your odds are something like what, 1 in 12?
Unfortunately, they do not have the compounding effects. And you could try just multiplying, but there hasn't been any study that says if you just do A, B, and C, the risk reduction is Z. But if you do watch all those controllable factors, chances are you're going to reduce your odds considerably. Obesity, you mentioned stay thin. It doesn't mean you have to stay thin. It means you just can't be overweight or obese. Body mass index is a measure that basically takes into account your height and weight, not just your overall weight. And it's a way to define obesity. A body mass index of 25 or less is considered normal. Body mass index of 25 to 30 is considered overweight, but a body mass index of 30 or over is considered obese. And again, a recently published study found a body mass index of 30 to 34.5 is associated with a higher breast cancer risk of about 23%, while a body mass index of over 35, that's very obese, is associated with a higher breast cancer risk of 39%. So obesity is not a good thing for breast cancer or other things for that matter.
Now, another thing I found fascinating, I mean, you have all kinds of statistics about being a student, and one of them is not everyone makes it to graduation, and many drop out. And the odds of a student at a public high school will drop out by the end of the school year, I thought was very interesting in that it varied substantially by state, so that, for example, it's much lower in South Dakota than it is in Alaska. And I would have thought, geez, these states are both cold in the winter. Why is there such a huge difference? One in 13 or one in 14 drops out in Alaska as opposed to one in 43 in South Dakota.
Yeah, I don't know the whys for each of those things, but there's a lot of factors to be considered. For example, I live in Massachusetts, and we have one of the lowest dropout rates in the country. We also have one of the highest, we call it MCAS, Massachusetts CAS, the standardized tests that are administered each year. And our students tend to do better on that as well. And are those exactly related? I don't know. But for whatever reason, we have a lower dropout rate and a better performance among high school students in Massachusetts than many of the other states.
Now, another thing you talk about is the odds of getting a job at, and depending on other things and the odds of majoring in certain things in college. Will it be a boy or a girl? The odds of a child being one or the other, living together, and sexuality. And one of the things that we often speak about is that 50% of pregnancies are unplanned. So when we come back, I'm going to talk to you more about that and the chances of getting pregnant on prom night are discussed in here, and the difference is whether you use condoms or not. So we'll go over that when we come back. Joe?
Okay, Dr. Mai, thank you very much. To reach us on the email here today, it's youdocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. And if you have a question or an odds question for our guest, Louise Firth Campbell, her book is called The Book of Odds. From Lightning Strikes to Love at First Sight, The Odds of Everyday Life. It's published by William Morrow. Just email us up, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamins C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase two bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a third bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive three bottles of Nighttime for the price of two.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout: give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Louise Firth Campbell is the Chief Operating Officer of the Book of Odds. Her book is called The Book of Odds. She's the co-author, From Lightning Strikes to Love at First Sight, The Odds of Everyday Life. It's published by William Morrow, and one of her specialties is health and medical odds. And again, here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. There's a whole bunch of just actually wonderfully interesting material in here. And so one of our viewers or readers or listeners asked us to ask you, what's the odds a 35-year-old single woman will get married by age 45?
Well, the older you are, the less likely it is you will get married. But we do have some in this book, some of the odds based on age. If you've never been married before, the odds you'll get married at age X, Y, and Z. And in fact, they were in the chapter called Marriage, which I'm sort of turning to right now. So it's not so much, I don't think they break it down within the next 10 years as much as they do the odds of the person of a given age likelihood of getting married. And I'm trying to find what those are now. But those are available, and they're the kind of thing that they publish in several times in a decade, and the government does study that and has studied it over time. So it's something that for which we do have the odds based on a reliable source of information. So trying to find the actual actual odds by age. I'm not sure. I know we have them. So we have the odds a woman will enter her first marriage by the age of 20, 25, 30, 35, and the odds increase the older you get up to a point. But then the odds someone age 35 will get married in her lifetime, the odds will drop the older you get when you haven't been married, if that makes sense. So
it does to me, yes.
Yeah. So
the odds, actually, you have this as the odds a woman will enter her first marriage by the age of 35 is 1 in 1.2.
Correct. So that age, a woman will have entered. So it starts in that little series, age at first marriage. It starts at age 20, and by age 20, 1 in 7.6 women have been married, have had their first marriage. By 25, it's 1 in 2.1. By 30, 1 in 1.4. By 35, 1 in 1.2. But it's a little bit different question. If you say, is a woman 35 who has not been married, will she get married in her lifetime? Those odds drop the older you get if you haven't been married at all.
Yeah, it actually looks like 20% of marriages will occur after age 35. Now, it doesn't answer exactly what we're asked, but we'll go to the website and try and find it rather than the book or the Facebook page.
Yeah. And the book just has, although there's lots of stats on that particular topic, because it's studied in the National Survey of Family Growth, which is the source of the odds a woman will enter her first marriage by age. And then there are also the odds a woman will get married by a certain age in the same source.
It turns out that sexual frequency in marriage for men relates to how happy they say they are. And if they're thinking they're having more sex than the average guy, they are happier, and you have that in here as well.
Right.
You're heart cheating. You even have the odds of an ever-married man or cohabitating adult who has not cheated during the relationship fantasizes about cheating is 1 in 3.3.
Right. So
there are all kinds of interesting things to read in here. Another one is, I was wondering, you also talk a lot about prom night. And what are the chances of getting pregnant on prom night?
Yeah, and that was actually, when you asked about how easy or difficult, how much study does it take to do some of the odds, and that one actually has to do with, it's a little story we put together. My co-author, Amram Shapiro in particular, was interested in this topic. And there's no study of girls who've had sex on prom night. But what we do have is several different things that were available. So the odds of a female 12th grade student had sexual intercourse, that's available. That's 1 in 1.6. And so to get the little story of pregnancy on prom night is a combination of data that's available and assumptions. So one of the first assumptions.
So 1 in 1.6 means roughly 60% of the time.
Yeah.
Someone has had pregnancy, has had intercourse before 12th grade, I guess you'd say.
No, a 12th grade student. So when they do that youth risk surveillance survey is the source of that, and they ask questions of people in different grades. And so the 12th graders who responded, this is available for both females and males. So 12th grade females, over 60%, have had sexual intercourse by their time they're in 12th grade. Doesn't say they've had it before 12th grade. Some of them will have had it before 12th grade, but it's by the time you're in 12th grade.
In 12th grade and before.
And before, yeah. And so starting with the number of 12th grade students who have had intercourse, females, then the next assumption that's made to get to this odds of a daughter will, what are the odds your daughter will get pregnant on prom night? So the first major assumption is assuming half the girls who have had sex will have sex on prom night. And then you have to go through, well, they're going to be using protection. Are they going to be using no protection, a condom, or a pill, contraception, or a combination. And there are data on the use of contraception by teenagers. In fact, there's a study that's done that's the teenagers in the United States, sexual activity, contraceptive use, and childbearing. The National Survey of Family Growth captures those data. And so by putting a bunch of these different data points together, we came up with, it's a combination of stats and speculation, a nervous parent's speculative odds of a teenage girl getting pregnant when having sex on prom night, 1 in 506.
So 1 in 506.
Yeah.
And Joe, we're going to have to go to you pretty soon. Thank you very much. This is a wonderfully interesting book, The Book of Odds, and one of the authors who's been with us, Louise Firth Campbell. Joe?
Okay, Dr. Mike, and thank you, Louise Firth Campbell. That is called The Book of Odds, From Lightning Strikes to Love at First Sight, The Odds of Everyday Life. It's published by William Morrow, and it is a terrific read, and you can't put it down. None of these books are ones you can ever put down, and certainly this is the case with the book that was co-written by Louise Firth Campbell. Thank you for listening today to the show. Don't forget, it's udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com for any emails or questions you have for Dr. Mike. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Spring and summer bring out the best of nature, but blooming flowers, grass, and weeds emit pollen everywhere. Spring cleaning, molds, funguses, and pollens can cause severe allergic reactions. It's time to fight back. Get a blast of nature's most powerful natural remedy with Oreganol P73, the most powerful oil of oregano available anywhere. Oreganol P73 is an extract of hand-picked wild oregano grown in mineral-rich soils found only in the mountains of the Mediterranean. Experience this powerful and effective spice you can't find anywhere else. It is so effective, even the ancient Greeks used oregano for their health. And it's not just a mere spice. Oreganol P73 is also available as gel caps and as a sea salt based nasal spray. Use Oreganol P73 and stay healthy all summer long. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Available in natural food stores nationwide or visit AmericanWildFoods.com.
You may already take omega-3s for heart and brain health, but what most people don't realize is that DHA is really the preferred form. Did you know if you take omega-3s, but your body cannot convert them into the preferred DHA form, you won't get much benefit? The ultimate DHA omega-3 would be water-soluble, so it's already in the right form for digestion. That's a game-changer. It would eliminate the fish burps, be good-tasting, and all-natural. It would be environmentally sustainable from algae oil, plus non-GMO and allergen-free. Well, I have some good news for you. Empirical Labs already invented this. And better yet, you can get a bottle right now for 50% off with a special offer at TakeOmega.com. This is the only water-soluble DHA supplement, plus it's vegan. So go to TakeOmega.com right now for a limited time savings, 50% off at TakeOmega.com. That's O-M-E-G-A. TakeOmega.com.